6:30. I call this meeting in order, public safety meeting for July 7, 2016. In attendance, we have Alderman Colosimo, Tyrus, Peters, and myself, and guest Alderman Funkhauser. Citizens' comments. You're here for the liquor license, right?
Yes.
Okay, I tell you what, that's number four. It shouldn't be that long before we get to it. Why don't we just hold any comments until we get there? Jim, did you have anything? Okay. Minutes for correction or approval. Anybody have any changes to the minutes?
No.
Anybody okay with accepting them as presented?
Yes.
New business, PS 2016-12, police reports from March through June 2016. Comments, questions?
Nothing really jumping out. There's no real spikes or anything. Just kind of our normal affairs for the spring. Burglaries go up. Usually the burglaries we get in cars are unlocked vehicles, take a change, GPS, those kind of things out of them, whatever they can get. As usual, we put out public, you know, statements and releases to please keep your cars locked. And same thing with garages. We did have a few burglaries in the reports here in an area over off of, the older section of town from like East Spring Street, Fremont. But those were internal related burglaries, not like stranger victim burglaries. Okay. You know, which is kind of the norm for us. Very seldom do we get streaks of burglaries. We do, but everything in here is unfortunately pretty predictable.
Anybody have any comments, questions?
No.
Okay, everybody okay accepting them as presented?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Item number two, PS 2016-13, the adjudication reports for April through June 2016. Same thing, any?
No, just kind of typical fines. A lot of building and zoning side, it's a lot of the same violators.
The only thing I have to say for adjudication, it's probably beneficial if maybe once a year we do a Kathy to the hearing officers update. Because I mean, you know, they get appointed, they get on, and then, you know, they go through their little intro, and then that's it. And you know, things change and things need to get updated, cases come through the court systems and things like that. We get feedback. We probably need to do maybe like once a year, just have a mini 1 hour
powwow.
Yeah.
Powwow.
We did one in November or December when we retooled the adjudication process.
Okay, after the new law?
So, yeah.
Okay.
So we had a kind of an update at that point.
My only question about adjudication is actually kind of geared towards you, since you do adjudication in Oswego. Is there any difference between what they do now, what we do now, and what Oswego does because they're home rule?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it like vastly different or?
Well,
yes.
They have a lot more authority in,
right,
in Oswego, yes.
The biggest administrative change is you can change the notification windows. So currently ours is 30 to 40 days, which means for any day that we write a ticket, we basically have to, you know.
You have to have a hearing
every week. Oswego will combine it and do less hearings.
We do it once a month.
Yeah. So it saves us a lot on costs.
Yeah, right.
So the enforceability is a lot easier as a home rule municipality. And then also there are higher fine thresholds for home rule municipalities. So it's something, especially from the enforceability standpoint, would be a huge deal. The administrative side would save us some aggravation on our part, but the savings might only be a couple $1,000s a year. So.
It's just rough having to have it every week.
Yeah,
right.
Because of those windows.
Well, I mean, we got what, four to six people here every week?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot of staff effort.
Depends on what's going on with the violations. Sometimes more, sometimes less.
Because if it's a certain type of violation, the officer that was involved in it has to be there as well, right?
No, but sometimes we do. If it's something that we think is more serious, we'll have that officer come in. But that's one of the beauties of the adjudication. We don't have to pay that overtime.
Yeah.
You know, like traffic court, they have to be there for this. You know, we have our representative representing them. If you guys just grab one of those, I'm passing around. That'll help explain the next step.
Okay, anybody else have anything on the adjudication reports? Everybody okay with it, accepting them as presented?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, PS 2016-14, a request to purchase 4 police vehicles. I don't know which one of you guys want to...
Just bounce off each other. You guys got all saw the memo that I put in there. It might be a little confusing. But basically what we started with is we have 1 vehicle in the police capital for this year's budget. And we are requesting to expend those funds, it says in there. Now, I had been working with the city administrator, Bart Olson, for the last few months on obtaining some more vehicles. As you all know, I've been complaining, but I've been bringing up for a couple of years that...
Inquiring.
That we are very short on police vehicles and we are having problems. And I'll go into a little bit later. I passed out some information on where we are currently and where we'll be with these new vehicles for you to look at. But out of some savings out of last year's budget, we had discussed that the possibility of purchasing some new vehicles, and that's kind of where we came in today. And Bart's got the information on the funding for the vehicles.
Sure.
But it looks like the funding is there, you know.
Okay. So you got 4 of them. 3 of them are squad cars. 1 of them is an admin car. So the admin car is about $23,000. Each of the squad cars are about $44,000. He's budgeted to approve 1 as part of the fiscal year 17 budget in the vehicle line item. So that covers all of the first vehicle, and then there's $10,000 remaining. So you take that $10,000 and you couple it actually with the $55,000 that we had budgeted for body cams that we're not going to do in fiscal year 17. That's money that can just be reappropriated via the line item. So that would actually cover 1 of the admin cars and another squad car. So that gets you 3. And then the 4th one is going to be $44,000 that we're going to recommend as just a normal budget overage, budget amendment at the next meeting. We're starting to get early numbers back from the fiscal year 16 budget. We had approved about a $10,000 surplus, and we were kind of on the same trajectory as we were in previous years. We think it'll be several $100,000 in surplus. So to me, $44,000 for an extra squad car is not going to kill us. And then it also catches us up just a little bit with, kind of the replacement schedule we've been trying to get to. Then additionally, you know, when the audited numbers come in August, September, we present it in October. We do our goal setting session basically around then. We always can, either put money into the fiscal year 17 budget again, or even just add more cars in fiscal year 18.
Now, this is an issue the chief's been asking for a while. It seems like we're always playing catch up with squad cars. And during the lean years, it seems like one of the items that just kind of gets put on the back burner. And I really think it's a great opportunity to start getting caught up. And I fully support this. Money's there. The need is there. And hopefully we can get on a schedule where we don't have to be asking for 4 every so often. So I'm good with this. Open this up for discussion.
I'm good with it, sir.
I mean, when you look at a 2005 vehicle we have that we've put $17,000 into repairs, you could just, I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, and I understand we have to go through the lean years, and that's what caused that, the backup. But now that we have the opportunity, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. I mean, I'd approve 5 or 6 if we could, so
right.
I'm fine with 4.
The 2 comments I have is, number 1, we had discussed initially how the goal was to get the Caprices, but those are kind of like on a nationwide backorder, and they have to be shipped from a different country, blah, blah, blah. Impala's the choice, though.
Isn't it like Australia or something?
Yeah, they make them in Australia. But that was the choice. The rear-wheel drive seemed a whole lot better for us. Mm-hmm. We looked into the Ford... their sedan, that's the police interceptor,
yeah.
And those are. Problem is, most of the budgets come due in May, so everybody buys them right away.
Right.
And so right now we're a little bit behind that because we're waiting on the budget numbers. Mm-hmm. So the only thing available is Impalas, and they're priced. You know, they're probably the best price out there too.
Right.
And we already run a lot of Impalas as it is, so that was the kind of the default vehicle of choice, but it's not a bad choice.
And then you're going to go on the record and saying we're never going to paint a cop car like a clown car. Yeah,
correct. You're referring to these are all going to be the
what
we've striped out in our cars as they are now.
And are we going to have a decommissioning ceremony to
yes.
get rid of that freaking
we have
clown
one
car?
Left.
I've been making fun of that guy.
Which one is it?
Yeah,
the clown car, the white one with the red.
Oh, no.
It is the
clown car.
We have 2 left. It is. We have, I thought we had 1 left.
5 and 19.
When
I bring somebody to Yorkville and they see that thing driving by, I always distract them. squirrel, because those are embarrassing to see. So yeah, the new ones.
It's Washington, D.C. still has that scheme.
I also make fun of Washington, D.C. quite often.
For many reasons.
That was hot back in the day.
You know what else was hot? I don't want to get it.
Don't let them pass.
Traditional black and white. Yeah. Never goes out of style.
Nope.
No, I'm excited. I think the one area that we talk about in budgeting is, right, making sure that you have enough money. But how do we do it so that he can get the Caprices?
Yeah.
So that's
that's the problem. Most places put the orders in.
You have to have the money stacked up in the next year's budget ready to go as soon as we approve the budget, the orders in May. This is done on we have money left over from last year. Now, 2-3 months later, we've discovered. So let's do this now. So
our goal should be Australian American cars.
Aussie.
Right. Well, I understand it. Is it depth or is it a height difference?
I think it's just, it seems like the police vehicles take turns going from rear-wheel drive to front-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. You know, and Chevy gave up the Caprice years ago to the Crown Vic, and now the Crown Vic gave it up to the Caprice. You know, so you see a lot of those agencies that really run them, like the state police and all that, they're getting Caprices.
So the ones we're getting, are they front or rear?
They're rear. Well, the ones we're getting are front.
The ones we're getting
are front. Yeah, the Impalas and the Fords are front-wheel drive. Well, the Fords are actually an all-wheel drive. They're front-wheel drive with assisted rear-wheel. But, and my opinion has always been on the front-wheel drive cars, they just don't hold up the same.
Right.
You know, but the Caprices are usually about $3,000 or $4,000 more expensive than the Impalas are. And, you know, but they hold up at least another year or two longer than the front-wheel drive cars do.
Maybe we can fix it. You know, put $17,000 into fixing it, make it last a little bit longer, right? Yeah. So why is the $8,000, is that like a benchmark that you shoot
for? What we do to determine whether we're getting rid of cars or not, we look at the year of the car, we look at the amount of money we put into them, and we look at the miles on the car. For money, about $8,000 starts getting on our radar, it's time to get rid of that car. The mileage, you know, if you look at a couple of the cars we're getting rid of, like the 2004 Impala, it says that we've only got 5,000 into it. That's deceptive, because we got that car 5, 6, 7 years ago from the city, and we don't track, you know, inside what they put into it already.
Right.
So that's got a lot more money into that, and, you know, so. But when the three of them, you know, that 2004 is way out of whack.
Does that include like regular maintenance, like oil change? It right. goes on to that.
Yes. Yeah. Everything we put into that car, from windshield washers to transmissions to you name it.
Everything. Okay.
We had kind of tracked it out a few years ago with a consultant. And generally it was at about 60 or 70,000 miles, you start to incur a lot of the, like, you know, really big repairs. Mm-hmm. But then additionally, if you sell it about there, it still has a value of $10,000 or $11,000. So people will look at it and go, you only got 60,000 miles on this car, but, you know, the net cost of operating the car over that period ends up only being, you know, $8,000 or $9,000 because you're trading it in for so much. So that was kind of like the, you know, the breaking point. You know, for each individual car, sometimes you get lucky and it doesn't rack up any major repairs for, you know, 80,000 miles or 90, but usually it's right around 60 or 70.
Now, we had talked earlier that it wasn't always about mileage, it was about engine hours. Is that a metric we can track on new vehicles coming in? Because it seems like the majority of mileage isn't always the issue. It's the fact that they run for 3 weeks at a time.
Correct, and that's one of the reasons why we do the maintenance too. Some of the older vehicles, newer ones, are all coming with hour meters on them too. But a lot of the older ones don't still, and a lot of times your police package cars don't have all the stuff regular civilian cars do, because they try to, you know, keep them simple for us to a degree. But if you start looking at the way, the like he was talking about the money we're putting into the cars, you know, that'll usually show you what the hours are too. But like right now, one of our problems we're incurring is we got two cars that we got three people working in. And I know somebody was telling me we had one of our cars that didn't shut off for 6 days straight. You know, because it was used when we had, you know, if a vehicle goes down, which happens all the time, and it needs to get worked on, you know, or one gets wrecked, you know, which we statistically have, you know, 2 to 3 car accidents a year. And, you know, then it starts impacting the rest of the fleet.
Right.
You know, when things were ideal back in the day, we always had a backup car or two that was there for, like, the part-timers to use, or if your car broke down, you took the backup car so that you didn't start racking the miles up on other people. If you look at M12 and M11 and M12, both of those were bought at the same time. M11's got 54,000 miles on it, M13's got 80,000 miles on it. That's one of the cars that was using three people. So you can see how fast we can start tracking miles on them, just, you know, when we start having problems. And I know the other thing we've historically done too, that we've never purchased admin cars. We've always taken admin cars out of patrol when they got like 60,000 miles on them, you know, and then they would last longer that way. But we've been running our patrol cars until they die, you know. And so that's the reason why we've been getting these admin cars now. So technically now admin should be stacked for probably, other than one vehicle that we're still short on, we should be stacked for 7 or 8 years on admin right now.
Now, is it ever an option to go to the state auctions and buy them from the state police, or are they already beat the hell anyway?
Right, they're already beat up. They're like our cars when they get rid of them. You know, they've been running them hard for miles and miles, and nobody can usually, there's a state bid out there, and there's also a consolidated service out of Will County, and nobody can beat them, the two of those people.
Okay. Is everybody in the committee okay with this purchase?
Absolutely.
And with sending this to the next full city council, it would like the 26th?
Yes.
For the budget amendment?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask
Chris?
Questions real quick? I just have two quick questions. One, regarding bid process, I know the cars that we're going after are from the state bid. Mm-hmm. I know we looked into Jovic and Westfall. Do we solicit bid by posting, or do we just contact the other two?
We just contact them.
Yeah.
We just contact them.
And for the equipment, do we, same thing, do we publish that for bid process, or do we just contact and request?
We just contact vendors to see what prices we can get our best.
Okay.
You know, and we'll contact them, and we'll talk to other agencies and see where they're getting their equipment from, or who's installing it, or who's maintaining it, and you know, just go from there.
Because on a per vehicle basis, it's under $20,000, so technically we don't have to.
Correct.
This one, obviously, aggregate is over. Okay, that's fine.
But yeah, but it goes by the individual products too, because we're not spending that much on like computers or something like that, you know.
And then the other question, in the memo, there's one item that I have not seen before in since I look back through 13, miscellaneous unexpected expenses, $2,000 line item.
Yeah.
Hasn't shown up on the prior purchases we've done. You know,
we did that
15, 14, 13.
We did that in the spring purchase we did this year.
Was that
we had that on there because it seems like there's always something that we miss, or there's something that's out of date and needs to be upgraded or something, or there's always something. It never usually goes over $1,000, but it's like you got so many components you're putting into that vehicle that just something always pops up. So we just figured that can kind of catch all on that. And
just seemed like a high line item, $8,000 for the four.
Yeah.
I know we have some of those things, especially if they were old cars, when we're retrofitting them. But now that these are new, I would think that Langer would have their have these orders down pretty well. But okay.
Yeah, there's always it may not even be minor fault. It might be the rack that you know the gun rack in there now has changed because this year model was different.
It says it fits, but may not.
It says it fits, but it doesn't. It's just there's always something, a bracket or a mount for the radios and. And then we're always like, oh man, there's 2,000 or 1,000 or whatever. Just always ends up being that way.
The guy that also does the purchasing for Minor, he hasn't done it for a long time. He kind of got moved up in the chain. So like once in a great while it'll happen, it'll be like, well, I forgot to add this, or you don't need this, but you need this. So that's kind of why we had a little cushion in there. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Okay, anything else? All right, moving on. Item number four is CC 2016-38, the ordinance amending liquor code, increasing number of Class A liquor licenses. Now, we talked about this at City Council, pretty good discussion, and it got sent over to Public Safety. Now, you gentlemen are here for this issue. Did you want to? Now's the time if you want to address it. Feel free, you don't have to, it's up to you.
Okay. So, yeah, we are asking for the combination license. I have, like, right now, the we're asking for the serving license. So, I can sell, but now it's the combination licensing. This is only because of I want to add the gaming terminal, and it is required that serving license, so that's the purpose. To adding the gaming terminals, and that's why I need that license, serving license for to add those gaming terminals. As you know, like you, if you visit the store, we invest a lot of money to bring that place up. We remodel all this from the previous store. We make everything new, so we invest a bunch of money in that. And now It's a kind of slow, business is slow moving. So we try to, you know, our investment, we have to protect our investment, plus try to survive that. So that's only the reason we come. We have some room for that, and that's why we come with the idea we can adding the gaming terminal. So it's help to survive us, to bring some revenue in, and for adding that terminal, we need that license.
Okay. Well, it seems to me we've got basically three options here as a committee. We can approve this, we can deny it, or we can ask staff to come up with an amended category that might cover some of the concerns. Staff's recommendation is they're okay with it as an A1, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then Chief, you're on board with that?
I'm on board with it too.
Okay. And then the issue of limiting customers to two drinks is something that we cannot enforce, correct?
Correct.
But you as a liquor license holder can. So it's not something we can put into writing that requires it be done that way. That would be a preference of mine. If you're willing to do that, that's great, but it's the reality is we can't enforce that. And it seems to me at the council meeting, the concern was somebody walking in and buying a six-pack of beer rather than being served and then walking over and playing games. Now, in that situation, would that still be a two-drink limit? I mean, how does that work? That's, you know, to me, is your bartender going to say, I've been watching you drink two beers, that's all you can drink here? How do you enforce that?
Okay, so if anybody want to drink that, they have to buy from the bar.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's why the bar area, there's a different area there. He has to buy from the bar, so if you want to drink that. But if not, like somebody get the bottle from the store and they can start to drink or like six pack or whatever, they start to drink from that.
Okay, but legally, somebody could do what I just described. Am I correct?
No. I believe, like any liquor license that has package sales, they have to buy it from the bar. You know, you can't go into, like, OJ's has a package liquor licensing. You can't buy a six-pack of beer from their fridge and go to their machines and drink it. It has to be bought from the bar, doesn't it?
No, the code allows flexibility there.
Oh, does it?
It does, yeah. I checked with Kathy before the meeting, so... So the other A1 licenses could do that too. So if the establishment permits it, so they can charge corking fees, they can restrict it if they want to. The video gaming license for the state may not allow you to take the six pack over there, or the business owner can restrict it. So from a business perspective, I mean, if you're selling a bottle of beer at the bar for $6 or $5 versus selling a six pack of beer for $5 or $6, you may not want to permit that person to be able to go over there and buy the beer for cheaper and then walk over and drink it. So there is a built-in incentive that, in my mind, usually prevents that from occurring in some of the places that I've been to that have both like a grocery area and a bar. You know, they'll charge a corkage fee because they don't want to lose money.
That's true. They're not going to buy any bottle or any six-pack from the store and they can start to drink at the bar. Because that's how we lose the money too, because if they want to drink, they have to buy from the bar. So we can enforce that also.
Well, I'll open up for discussion here. How does the committee feel about this?
That was my initial concern, because as a guy who doesn't have a lot of money, it sounds pretty attractive. Spend $6 on a sixer, then go sit down, and it's like I'm at a bar with a sixer between my legs. So knowing that it's not your intention to allow people to do that, that kind of clarifies that for me. I also wasn't too in favor of having like a sit down out like a liquor store, but it's your business, man. You can kind of do what you want. And I understand you've dumped a bunch of money into this place and you want to see it survive. I get all that. I don't think I would be playing, you know, poker machines while I'm in a liquor store, but I can't speak for everyone, and I'm not going to hold up, you know, a businessman for making a decision. I just think it's weird that the license, which has nothing to do with you, I think it's weird that the license is attached to the ability to pour liquor. So
that's all on the state, and I don't understand what the state does 90% of the time anyway, so I can't really comment on that. But understanding the direction that you're headed, two drink maximum, it's a good idea, just as a business owner, so you don't get any hooligans in there. But the second thing of not allowing somebody to buy something and then drink it in the store, that's all I was worried about. So that's, I wish you luck.
Well, as I said in the city council meeting, I'll say again right now, I don't support it. I think we have enough of these video machines already in Yorkville. I supported the video machines when they first came in. To authorize them, I think that they're okay to have them to a certain extent. I think the answer to your question is I don't know why it's attached to the port license. I think that's the legislative intent. They wanted these machines to be available at places that are bars and eateries, and I think their intent was we don't want these machines in a liquor store because otherwise they wouldn't have required the port license. They would have just required a liquor license and you can put them anywhere. So I think we're circumventing the legislative intent of the act by handing out these liquor licenses when we know there's no intent to pour liquor. It's a liquor store.
Gotcha.
I don't want liquor stores that are pure liquor stores to start becoming gathering places. A liquor store, I pull in, I go in, I buy what I want, and I leave. That's how a liquor store should work. If you want people to stay, then you need to open a bar, serve food, and do what everybody else does as far from a bar perspective. I don't support it. I think it's a slippery slope. I don't like the idea at all. I have nothing against Mr. Patel and his business, but he opened a liquor store. He didn't open a bar. He didn't open a restaurant. And you know, when we say, well, these other establishments have them, yeah, the other establishments listed in the memos serve food. And it's the type of establishment you go, you park, you go in, you sit down, you have a few beers, and you eat some food. That is not what we have here, and I think we're starting to blur that line, and I think it sets a bad precedent. Plus, I don't want the number of these machines expanding in the city of Yorkville, so I don't support it, and I am very much against it.
We do have the two BPs that are on there. They both have the license.
Right. There's only one.
And I don't like that either.
Yeah,
I don't like that either.
But
think
they
it's
do,
ridiculous.
In fact, have food, so I mean, they have corn nuts.
Yeah, but I still don't, and I don't like that idea. Now, the BP is a different establishment because they have a grocery and all that, but establishments where you set it up where it's go in, buy, and leave should not be establishments where you can sit and gamble. Period.
Can I say something? I'm Jim Rizzico at Universal Gaming, so I came along just if there was any questions as far as gaming. The reason they tied it to liquor licenses in Illinois, because in Iowa, let anyone put games in. So they were at 7-Elevens, laundromats, gas stations. After a year of it, they repealed it and made everybody take them out. So that was the reason it was tied to liquor licenses. That way they figured there was a background check done via their liquor license. It could not have a felony,
right.
So kind of regulated it there. I have a list.
So why did they require the poor license? They could have just required any old liquor license.
No, in Iowa, they let everyone have it.
I meant in Illinois.
The purpose behind the tying it to the liquor license was so that we would have more control over the decision. So that was debated as part of it. They said they're going to regulate this at a state level, but they'll tie it to a liquor license. That way you could have control over it at the local level. So, because if you don't want the video gaming license there, you do not have to grant the liquor license. You have pretty wide discretion to do that.
I mean, if you look at the list, I have 30 locations right here that are food and liquor markets, and they basically just put gaming in to supplement their revenue. Yes, the main goal is not the gaming. It is to sell retail liquor, but it is a supplement for Mr. Patel, and I mean, that's what he's hoping for.
And that's why the state gives the combination license. That's the reason. So you can get the serving and selling license together.
How many machines are we talking here?
Five.
Well, that's a state regulated number.
Yeah.
It's a maximum per establishment.
But there are some places that only have two, right?
Yeah.
Seaver,
I'm pretty much of the opinion too that I don't like the idea of package and then drinking at the same.
Okay. Well, what would you feel comfortable if we created a different class?
No, I mean, because it's just, at that point, we're just playing around with words. The fact of the matter is, we're still going to have a liquor store that sells no food, has no bar. I mean, obviously, they're going to put in a little bar because they're required to be a gambling establishment. And that is not the intent.
Excuse me, that's your concern is about the selling the food, but I have that particular area. It's a kind of a bar. I have a food too, but that's a particular
idea. Well, I understand, but you're putting in a bar and food to get the machines. It's not a restaurant. It's not a traditional tavern or bar. It's a liquor store. And if we allow this, then the next guy's going to come in to push the boundary even more. Well, you allowed it in a liquor store, so now give me a liquor license. I don't intend to sell any liquor. I'm not even going to have it on the shelves. I sell no liquor, but I'll have a liquor license with a pour license. I'm going to put a little tiny bar in the corner, and it's going to be a video arcade, but I'm going to have gambling machines. And then the next guy's going to come in and say, give me a liquor. No. This is not the intent of the statute. These machines are meant to be in a place where people congregate, hang out, have a beer, eat their food. It is not meant to be in a liquor store. And I have nothing against liquor stores. I plan on stopping at your establishment and buying two bottles of Tito's on the way home for the weekend because we're having a party. The fact of the matter is, that's what a liquor store is for me to swing in, grab the booze, and leave.
Right.
It is not a conforming use, in my opinion, and I'm not going to support it. Absolutely not.
Well, we're looking for some kind of recommendation for the full council on this committee.
And I need to remind everybody on committees, it needs to come out with a 3-1 vote. That's the reason we have committees.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is take a roll call vote here with the committee members. And the issue is whether or not to recommend the approval of the ordinance before us, amending the code, increasing the number of liquor licenses for Class A by one outside of the downtown area. Carwell?
Nay.
Seaver?
Nay.
Yeah, I gotta go with nay too.
Okay. I vote aye, but it's a mute point. So it's defeated 3-1. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Moving on. Old business, PS 2016-10, police facility planning. We had this on at the last meeting. Is there any update, anything?
Not really. We're still reviewing maintenance proposals and contracts to do studies of each of the buildings. Nothing else has really come up that's pertinent to the topic since then.
Yeah, I think we need to keep it on the horizon because we don't want it to let it slip, but I think the building study, possible new location for City Hall that I've been pushing, all those things have to be panned out before we decide, you know, how much money is going to be dumped into that project. But we can't just say, let's not talk about it again. 10 years from now, we're like, oh, by the way, we need a police station.
Right.
So.
Well, since we're meeting quarterly, I'd just like to keep this on under old business.
I agree.
Just keep it in front of everybody. Any other discussion on that?
Regarding meeting quarterly, past couple days, if you've read the paper, it's been a pretty crappy day for law enforcement in the last 48 hours. Pretty crappy environment for fans of not dying. So this morning, while reading about the latest, I had this weird sinking feeling that by allowing public safety to go 3 months without a meeting, we're somehow not doing what we should be doing. So I had like this enormous sense of guilt. Extreme sadness reading about this stuff. And I know that sometimes we have nothing to talk about. I know that sometimes all I have, my only interaction with this committee is reading those frickin' police reports every day. Somehow I think the overall public safety is more important than the convenience of not having a meeting. And I know that these two issues aren't directly related, But they are, because our responsibility here is public safety. Granted, Yorkville has 1% of the issues of other larger urban areas, and thankfully, you know, it starts from the top. We don't have a chief who is a, for lack of a better term, a piece of crap. So I know that we have the correct leadership. I just want to be here more often discussing public safety. And if we don't have topics for a meeting, then we don't have to have a meeting. But I don't want to continue with the every 3 month thing. I think it should be on the agenda every month, or at least on the calendar every month. And if we decide a week before, hey, there's no agenda items, so be it. We can push it off just like we were doing. But if something pops up the week before, I want to know that it's already on my calendar. And being an adult with a lot of children, if it's not on the calendar, I'm not looking at it. And I want to keep an eye on this, because I am concerned for the greater good that things like that happened in Minnesota and Louisiana the past couple days can happen here. I know that they won't, because I trust my chief of police, but I want to be available every month for this committee, because I feel entrusted with a little bit of responsibility, and I want to be closer to it, because I care about Larry, and I care about Rich, and I care about Terry, and I care about all those guys. But I'm also super concerned about the fact that Yorkville has always been a leader. Just to hear Todd Milliron toot the horn of Yorkville every time that he comes and talks to city council about the fact that we're proactive about stuff. We do things before everybody else in the county. We do things before everybody else in the country, because we know that it's right. As much as I do enjoy the fact that, you know, it's an every 3 month meeting, for some reason it hit me this morning, and that's, I think that we owe it to the public's safety to at least keep it on the calendar every month. And like I said, if it doesn't have any agenda items, it doesn't have any agenda items. We don't have to have a meeting. But I want to be available, and I want it in my schedule, because I believe that it's important.
Well, I'll respond to that. First of all, I appreciate your concern. If you look back, and Carol, you were chairman, we were canceling meetings constantly because we didn't have agenda items. The only thing that was showing up was police reports, adjudication reports. Today's age of technology, when we're getting emails, we get a daily email about police activity. I know for a fact the chief and Bart are readily accessible if we have a question. I mean, you look at this agenda, and it's been 3 months, and really, you've got two issues. So, I know what you're saying, and believe me, public safety, I've been doing it a long time. It's very important to me. If I thought for a minute us meeting every month could change something and make it 100% better, I'd be all for it. And there's nothing stopping us from calling a meeting if we have a reason to. We've got that date open. If there's something that's piling up and we need a meeting, we're going to have a meeting. It's as simple as that. But just to say we're going to have it on the calendar every month, just to say, just because we want to, doesn't mean we're going to meet.
Right.
So I don't necessarily think we have to go back to a monthly meeting.
Okay. Understood.
And I open that up for any other committee input on this.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, all of us would make ourselves, if something came up that was of the urgency that we needed to have a meeting, we're all going to make ourselves available, post it, and meet. I mean, that's just going to happen. I mean, we were canceling a tremendous amount of meetings in the past, and that's just administrative work and posting the cancellation notices and that kind of stuff. Even though it's minor, it's more busy work for people. But I agree with you. I mean, public safety to me is, you know, I've always said, you know, city government, you know, the water runs, the toilets flush, and the streets are paved, and the people are safe. That's what we do. If we don't do those things, everything else is just, you know, bells and whistles. So I take public safety really seriously, and if we ever need to meet, you know, if it's serious enough, obviously all of us will cancel or do whatever we need to do to get together.
Right.
So.
And if you have issues that come up and you want to have a meeting, just let us know. We'll have a meeting.
Right. Well, it's just, I mean, the fact that you look at the calendar, and it's, I guess it's better than having a line through the thing, but I mean, it's just from a non-elected official, non-city employee perspective, non-police officer perspective, to see every committee have a meeting, with the exception of Plan Commission and a couple that get canceled once in a while. to have like the most important committee not be on every month. That was just, like I said, I appreciate the conversation, but it's a thought that popped in because public safety is number one. Even though there's nothing to talk about because we don't have a lot of these issues, that's why it concerned me this morning that if the appearance is that, oh, it's only four times a year, it's not that big of a deal. I had never considered that thought before, so I wanted to at least explore it with you guys because you were the two with the most experience in it. So I usually have the experience from the other end, so it's comforting to know that you're just as conscientious as I'm attempting to be as a new adult, but it's more of a, how do you make a gesture that reaches everyone in the community, that they understand that we're not just showing up and talking about police reports?
Personally, I don't think a lot of people realize we switch from monthly to quarterly.
Oh, absolutely.
And you can tell by our attendance normally at our meetings, unless there's a big issue, the public doesn't attend these committee meetings.
Right.
So, like I said, I appreciate your concern and I share your concern. It's just, until there's a reason to have one every month, I think we'll try this, and you know, maybe at in 6 months we'll say, geez, things have changed, maybe we need to go back. But as of right now, I don't see the need. Seaver?
I guess I somehow somewhat agree with you that there seems like there's a void here that we're not filling. But on the other hand, if we don't have an agenda, I guess I'd ask the question, are there things we should be discussing that we aren't?
Right.
And
that was my initial concern. Like, what could have, like, if you're another city council in a city where something like what happened yesterday or today happened, what could have that governing body done to hopefully prevent that?
And nothing.
I know, but that's also by encouraging our chief to not suck and or push training and be extremely, you know, of the utmost ethical caliber. But that's, I know that we have that. So, I mean, once we do go back to monthly meetings, it's obviously the chief of police's fault.
Well, you know, I feel, as a city council member, that we're blessed to have good people in key positions. And I think the public's very lucky that we have the people we have. And I have that comfort level that if there's something going on, we're going to hear about it. And if there's a need to have a meeting about it, we'll do it. I mean, there's a lot of things going on in society. You say, well, what can we do to maybe make it better or prevent it or whatever? But the reality is there's not a whole lot in many situations that we can, you know, that we can do. So, but let's put it this way. We'll continue to monitor it. And like I said, I'm open to going back if there's a reason to do it.
Thank you for the discussion.
Okay. I guess we're under additional business. Anybody have anything? Chris.
If we could. 4th of July, I want to say that the officers did a great job out there. One thing I noticed, on the traffic patrol on Route 47, the officers that were out there, initially I noticed they had no safety vests on. Then after a while, two of the three I noticed ended up with vests, but throughout the day, or the morning I should say, there was still one out there that did not have a vest at any time. I'm not sure if there's a policy that we have. It seems like that would be, this was at Main in 47. The officer up on the north end at Center, is that correct? The north end of Park Center did have a vest, but then the two officers at Main, one did, one did not. And I do believe it was a sergeant who, from my opinion, should know better and should have one. We've talked about that intersection quite extensively about safety in both public safety committee and public works. I think we would want to represent the utmost safety we could in protecting our own officers and the public. So I don't know if it was a general oversight. I doubt we were short of vests, but I appreciate their duty that they're doing out there, but that struck me as a little odd that day.
They should have had their vests on for this policy. We will look into that, and I'm sure Larry will deal with that with due diligence, and that should not have occurred.
Okay. I noticed it, and I'm sure others may not be as critical as I am, but I think that's kind of what we need to do from our perspective. So
yeah, they that was a dedicated thing. It's yeah, I can understand sometimes if you jump out of your car in a hurry to deal with something, I get that, but they should have that on, so.
Okay.
We will look into that and make sure that occurs in the future. And thank you for bringing it to our attention. Okay.
And speaking of that intersection, I don't know if everybody's aware, but there is going to be some improved, there's going to be a button there. There's going to be a flashing sign, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it's the LED
crossing
sign, yeah.
Which we're expecting when, next month?
Yes, we should have the end of it.
We had also discussed for next year with the 4th, too, that we're going to have our guys and girls out directing traffic 30 minutes earlier next year. We did not realize the number of people that would be crossing Route 47 compared to previous years of the construction. The amount of people that parked, you know, East Main Street, Spring Street, all the way down to McHugh was amazing. Mm-hmm. How many people were there. So we did notice that we usually planned on having our traffic control out at 8 o'clock an hour early. Next year we'll be moving that to 7:30, just because there were that many people coming in advance this year.
Is there ever going to be a crossing at Hydraulic in 47?
No.
Anybody notice the people that were trying to cross to get to Crusade? They parked behind Rowdy's, and they were basically, it was like Frogger.
Yeah, all the intersections were like that because we had officers, like say at Main Street and over at...
they don't want to walk the half block up.
There is a crosswalk north of the railroad tracks.
But
there's not one south because of pedestrian clearance issues.
But we had them crossing every intersection on 47 on foot. You know, while we're out there direct traffic, like you said, it was like Frogger. Officers are watching them a block away going, you know, we got people to stop and get you across safely here. You got to walk past here anyways.
Right.
Well, I didn't know. We had people running right through them. You had no intersections, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was a very, very good 4th of July. You know, we didn't have any problems this year, no arrests or nothing. You know, we did have a few things here and there, but... Nobody got run over by a float. We only had one problem with one float, trying to break the norm, and I won't even bring up which float that was.
Is it the horn one?
No.
Okay.
One float that caused some grief for our people that decided they wanted to move barricades on their own and not follow the plan to get out of there. But other than that, everything went really good. And, you know, like every year we learn something new every year and we do this. And you know, like I say, next year we'll have traffic control out a little bit earlier.
Okay, any other additional business? Not? Meeting adjourned.